I'm George Kittle, and you're listening to the Niner Guys.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Niner Guys. Todd Kleinheim, Jerry Sue with you for another episode as leading into the NFL draft. We are 13 days away, I think. That's give or take. So we are definitely in the lying season, or as some teams have put it, just completely silent season. Some of these teams aren't letting anything out, but that doesn't mean there's not a lot of NFL news, starting with, we'll start with OBJ. How about that? Odell Beckham gets a big contract, $15 million from the Ravens. There was discussion about him going to the Jets, him being the missing piece. What does that mean for Lamar? So let's get into that, and then we'll get into more draft stuff, more Niner stuff. And I got an interesting question for you, Jerry, concerning tanking in professional sports that I want to get your opinion on. So the biggest news, I guess, is Odell signing his big contract. So does it mean anything? Does it mean anything that Lamar was supposedly part of the recruiting process? And did the Ravens just drastically overpay for a guy who's going to be 31 and coming off two major knee injuries?
Yeah, I was shocked at first when I saw that the Ravens offered OBJ a one-year, $15 million guaranteed contract, because no other team was going to sign him to that kind of money. Certainly not the 49ers, who are rumored, because, you know, they're always rumored, to be interested in OBJ. And I guess you could say that he sort of deserves to be paid in that range of, I think, an Allen Robinson, right? Because that's, I think, where Allen Robinson lands. But at the same time, as you mentioned, he is coming off, I believe, is a second ACL tear to the same knee.
Yes.
So who knows what he's going to be now? So $15 million is a lot, in my opinion. But also, when you look at how the contract is broken down, it is clear that this is all about Baltimore extending an olive branch to Lamar Jackson, I think, to get him to return, because OBJ's contract is actually just $3.9 million in terms of its cap hit this season, because it has four void years at the end of the deal, which means that the contract will likely be, I think, like $11 million of dead cap for the Ravens next year in 2024. So to me, I think this is Baltimore showing Lamar that what they're willing to do for him, and hoping that will entice him to come back, sign with the team, and move forward.
I never thought Lamar was going anywhere, so him coming back wouldn't be a huge surprise to me. Did you think there was a chance Lamar was going? And if so, does OBJ bring him back?
Yeah, I think he was definitely unhappy. I think he's voiced his unhappiness, not just with the contract issue, obviously, but with the fact that he believes he hasn't gotten the support at the wide receiver position. Does the OBJ signing entice him to finally make nice with the franchise? Again, hard to say, because I think the money's still an issue. So not to straddle the fence, but I will straddle the fence, and I'll have to say we'll see. I do think that it's definitely, because I think now, I don't think that Lamar was definitely courting OBJ, because obviously the money did the talking. So I think now it's more like OBJ will now be courting, or at least talking to Lamar, to try to reel him back in. But I will say, as an aside, this is just one example of how, when you're a team that is in a desperate situation, you just have to severely overpay. And I know we've talked about this offline. I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show, when it comes like to the San Francisco Giants, right? When they're in a position where they're desperate for a star player to come sign with them, particularly a star position player, they just have to grossly overpay. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing with the Ravens, because in no way, shape, or form should OBJ, with bad knees, coming off the ACL, really be paid that much. And that's why I don't think anybody else, like if you're the Chiefs, if you're the Jets, if you're the, I don't know, the Nine, anybody else, I think they're looking for him to take near veteran minimum.
Yep.
Around that $3 million, $4 million max.
How surprising is it that the team, one of the final two teams, that wasn't the desperate team was the Jets. The Jets were the one who didn't cave to the, we got to give him whatever he wants. I'm sure they're dealing with their own thing with Aaron Rodgers, and we'll get to that in a couple minutes. But let's talk about obviously the biggest Niner news, which isn't really news except for the fact we're in the dead off season. That being Trey Lance has a new throwing motion, a quicker, tighter delivery. If you watch the video, he's also out there working out with some NFL veterans. Mean anything or just dead time, got to publish some content?
I mean, obviously it's exciting just to see Trey Lance healthy and working out alongside the best quarterback in the NFL, right? It can only be a positive thing, I think, whether it's learning to pattern some of his game after Patrick Mahomes or to pick his brain about certain nuances of the position. But by the same token, I don't think it's anything we need to overreact about. After all, it was just, I think, one throw that they highlighted, and it looked really nice, right? Really tight spiral, which, again, a plus, but I don't think it really tells us the whole story about where Trey Lance is, how the workout went overall. So, I mean, hopefully he figures it all out, because it is a huge year for Lance, has a lot to prove, and honestly, without much help from the Niners in terms of his development or even instilling confidence in him. I mean, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more disappointed I am in how the Niners have really handled the entire Lance situation. So, like I said, I just hope he at least himself is able to get his game straightened out, getting things figured out on his own, because he's clearly on his own.
I think, look, anyone who reacts positively or negatively to the single clip is obviously has their bias, and you know what camp they're in from the moment they have their reaction. But anything other than he's working out with Patrick Mahomes and he threw a nice spiral. Great. I mean, that's good news. You know, it reminds me of, what was it, last year when we had the one video of Tua throwing like a wobbler to Tyreek, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this guy can't throw. Like, you got the fastest receiver, we got a quarterback. Okay. One throw, let's find out. But talk to me about why you're disappointed with the Niners and their development. Is it just because they didn't go get your, offensive quarterback coach to have, you know, basically be his buddy and like take him around, like always work with him, even though as the backup quarterback, he wasn't going to get a lot of reps? This was their opportunity to basically give him the homework, you know, without giving him the homework, and give him the reps without, you know, giving him the reps. What's the disappointment?
Yeah, well, what irks me is that the Niners invested so much to draft this kid who they knew was an extremely raw talent. One that, in my opinion, required, as you were talking about, more hands-on coaching and more game reps than they've been willing to provide. And then when they do play him, they often use him like a fullback, which is not exactly my idea of proper development. But I guess the thing that bothers me the most is the narrative that the Niners are this win-now team and they can't tolerate any of his mistakes. Well, if they weren't willing to go through the growing pains that inevitably comes with developing a young quarterback, then why the hell did they draft him in the first place? And also, why is it that Lance's mistakes are somehow worse than Jimmy Garoppolo's? Because let's not forget that the Niners got off to slow starts with Jimmy under center. And despite all of his, you know, greatness, Jimmy certainly threw his share of bad interceptions at critical times, and he even pulled the Orlovsky last year when he stepped out of the back of the end zone before throwing the ball. So if we're going to have a quarterback make mistakes, why is it more tolerated when the veteran does it, especially when the Niners invested so heavily in the young guy who should be learning on the job, because he's the one who supposedly has the bigger upside, and he's the one who is supposed to help them beat the Mahomes of the NFL. But all I keep hearing are these vague generalities like, well, he just needs to play and he just needs to be better. Okay, but how? Like, who did they assign to help Trey get better? Rich Scangarello, who got fired after one season at Kentucky because he made Will Levis worse. I mean, when the Bills had Brian Daboll, that guy's sole job was to develop Josh Allen, who was almost as raw as Trey when he came out, you know, from in the draft and into the NFL. So, I mean, who's been Trey Lance's Brian Daboll?
Yeah, no, I mean, no one.
But. And there you have it, right? So that's, I think all of that in a nutshell has been why I'm just kind of disappointed. Like, did you have a plan? Was this really your plan? Because it's not been a good plan. And I know he's been injured, but also the injuries have come from, was this your plan to play him as a like a running back or a fullback to get him his feet wet? Which, again, not a great plan. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, you know me. I somewhat disagree with most of that because I do believe in the win now. But, you know, there's really not – there's – he's – well, I was going to say he's going to have his opportunity, but I can't even promise you that he's going to have his opportunity, considering what is probably going to transpire, that being Brock Purdy not being ready for training camp. So it's going to be him and Sam Darnold. If Sam Darnold comes in and is splitting first team reps like Shanahan intimated, it's like you're not giving Trey that, you know, at least benefit of the doubt or slightly longer leash because, you know, of the amount you invested in him. I mean, right now, I don't think they care or that comes into – is a factor into what they're doing. Now, some would say that's a good thing. Some would say once you're drafted, it doesn't matter. You're on the team. You got to, you know, you got to work. You got to, you know, make your hay. Other people will say, well, that's why first round draft picks have much longer leashes than seventh round draft picks because of the investment in them that at some point they saw something worthy of them to take them so high. So, but I think it goes, again, it goes back to one of the things you just asked, and that was why did they draft Trey so high and give us a, I really believe some of it was an emotional reaction to the season that they just had with Jimmy getting hurt again. And it was just so frustrating for them to not have a talented young quarterback that could stay healthy. And it was just, I mean, there's no other word, frustrating for them that they then dedicated their time to, can we get a quarterback? Can we get a young guy in here that can do this kind of stuff? And then that led to what we all know is the trade up to number three and drafting Trey Lance, even though Mac Jones was, you know, hyped and, you know, said by many national writers and local guys that Mac Jones was going to be the pick. So, I mean, that's.
Well, but not only that, but remember, this is why I don't know if I totally believe. I mean, I believe that that's who Kyle obviously naturally gravitates to, right? We all know who what Kyle's cup of tea is. But having just gotten their ass whooped by Josh Allen that year, which I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Josh Allen really, you know, gave it to him. I think that was a big reason why Kyle might have decided, well, maybe I should kind of open my mind to other types of quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But then he, I don't know, did his mind just close back up come the offseason? Because he hasn't given Trey the Josh Allen kind of playbook of, hey, let's get out on the edges, use some natural athletic ability. He doesn't even give him the Brock Purdy playbook where it's like, hey, if you stay behind the line of scrimmage, use some athletic ability. And, you know, we're going to tell the guys, get open because this guy is not going down easy.
Exactly. I mean, I would love to be able to give Kyle, you know, so some sodium pentothal or whatever that truth serum is, have a one-on-one conversation. Like, what happened there? What went into this Trey Lance drafting decision? And why is it not seen? Why has it not worked? And why are you so stubborn in playing him the way you have? But I think we'll have to wait for a 30 for 30.
Yes.
You know, years down the line, maybe it'll finally be unveiled.
We will see. What else is happening around the NFL? Not a lot. You're starting to hear more and more whispers with the draft coming that Bryce Young Seems to be the guy in Carolina, despite his slightly small stature over CJ Stroud. The Texans aren't tipping their hand, but you got to think, quarterbacks top of their list, even though the idea of having Will Anderson's got to be appealing to a guy like D'Amico Ryans coming from the defensive side of the ball. The latest in Arizona world with the owner being sued. I mean, that's got to be a little bit much for a new head coach to try and handle that. I've got to now answer questions about all these types of things. So we'll have to see. But what other NFL news perked your ears this past week?
I mean, like you said, it's quiet. That's why you still hear those rumors about Trey being traded, about Aaron Rodgers coming to the Niners, which I'm sorry. I mean, for the last time, Aaron Rodgers is not being traded to the Niners. It's just not going to happen.
So about Aaron Rodgers. So who blinks first? Does New York blink and give up? Presumably either their first rounder this year or some package, assuming right now, which is everyone is talking about, that it sounds like it's a second this year and a to be determined pick next year. So if that's not enough for Green Bay, who blinks first?
Is that what they're asking? I thought they were asking for more, because if that's enough, I mean, if that's what they're asking, I don't know why there's a holdup, because to trade him for a second round pick this year, I don't really think that's that big of a, that big of a haul. And I don't know what the first rounder of his is, a conditional that he's not like a one and done. He doesn't just play 1 year and retire.
Yes.
And
yes.
I mean, that's fair, that's, right? It can't be a first rounder next year if all you have him for is just 1 year.
Yeah. So those are the rumors flying out there. The rumors are that Green Bay wants a first rounder this year. The Jets do not want to give up a first rounder. They would go as high as a second rounder with the conditions that, if he plays and comes back for a second year or takes us to the playoffs or something, we'll kick in another pick, in 2024. Right. So, but like I said, the Jets, the Packers are going to want that pick this year. They're not going to want to get, certainly not past the second round and not have traded and thus lose all their leverage. So, and on the flip side, New York has basically already told everybody with a microphone that, Aaron Rodgers is going to be our quarterback. So what a disappointment it would be if we get to training camp and, we got Zach Wilson again taking snaps. I mean, Jets fans, not always the most rational and logical in their feelings, probably wouldn't take well to that. So who's going to blink first?
I think the Packers will, just because they've gone down this road too often, and they've gone too far to just go, you know what? We're pulling the plug. Rodgers, throw on the number 12 and get to training camp, which he's not coming anyway. So
right, yes, that's absolutely true. I guess the biggest. The biggest news of the NFL week wasn't even handled on the field. That was, YouTube has rolled out their pricing plan for the NFL Sunday Ticket, which has been with DirecTV for, I want to say like 25 years or something like that. Didn't have their, and this isn't breaking news. I mean, we knew DirecTV wasn't taking it, and YouTube had purchased the rights to it. So now they just rolled out their pricing plan and basically what it takes to get the Sunday ticket. Now, I will say the one thing that's intriguing is the fact that, they still are going to have the red zone, but you get to watch, you get to choose between 1 and 4 games up on your screen. So you can basically, you be the Andrew Siciliano, the Scott Hansen, you pick the 4 that you want up on your screen and go from there. But
so I've never had DirecTV, but you've had it and you've had the ticket. So yes. The Sunday ticket. So is this multi-view option? That's new?
Brand new. Yes. Oh. So you used to be able to have one. There was a channel called the NFL Mix, and basically it just had all the games going at the same time on your screen. So now you get to pick And you got to listen to audio from one of them. Highlight it.
Oh, okay, I was gonna say all of them going at the same time in all the audio like that. That must have been insane.
So now you get to pick between just one game on your screen, two games, three games, up to four games. The price still remains a tough pill to swallow, I'm sure, for most people, as it ranges from essentially what, like 360 to 460, depending on if you have YouTube TV and their basic plan, or you just subscribe to their premium package, if you want the red zone included or not. So yes, again, it's a tough price to swallow, I would imagine, initially when you're talking about spending $400 or $500. If you're a fan of a team that you don't live in their area, and you're going to, if you're in Seattle and you want to watch the Cowboys, and you want to watch every game, it breaks down to like $30 or $40 per week. So certainly less than buying a ticket to the game. So you said you didn't have DirecTV, but you had Red Zone. So did you watch Red Zone? Did you like Red Zone? Is the ticket at all intriguing to you?
I think for me, the Red Zone's enough, because the Red Zone, the idea they're just constantly taking you to the game that has the most action or the most important action in the moment. So I put my football viewing experience in the hands of Scott Hansen, and he hasn't failed me yet. So it's fine. I don't know. I'm not that choosy. I mean, I suppose if I were still a participant in the world of fantasy football, that would probably, the idea of YouTube allowing for the multi game view would probably interest me more. But since I've long since hung up my fantasy football, I don't know what you call it, like spreadsheets.
Yeah, there you go.
So just the regular NFL Red Zone is good enough for me.
Let's talk about tanking, because I know you actually are a proponent of tanking. And this has come up because last week the Dallas Mavericks, who had, granted, a slim shot, but needed to win, I believe, their last two games to get into the NBA play-in tournament for the playoffs. They decided to sit like five of their six top scoring players and not sit him, but limit the play of Luka Doncic to 13 minutes all in the first quarter. And I believe Kyrie played a similar amount, thus prompting, what the heck are you doing? You're not even playing your good players in a must-win, get into the playoffs game. Jason Kidd, the head coach of the Mavericks, all but said it in terms of, this is an organizational decision. Sometimes you have to take one step back to take two steps forward, type of thing. And the only reason they would possibly tank in this case would be obviously to get Victor Wembanyama, I believe that's how you kind of say his name, the 7'4" phenom from France, who is by all accounts a once in a generational player. And at 7'4" and able to, I mean, he's 4 inches taller than Kevin Durant with the same type of skill set, able to handle the ball, shoot three. So yeah, I get it. You're trying to do this, but now the NBA is going to investigate the Mavericks into tanking and whatnot. So my initial question for you is, what do pro teams owe the fans?
Oh, I mean, in general, I think the pro teams owe the fans their best effort to field the best possible team they can to win the championship. So in my opinion, if tanking is what they deem the best course of action, then I'm all for it. But in the case of the Mavericks, I don't really understand what they did. I mean, you think that if they could get into the playoffs, it would mean more to that particular team that they got into the playoffs, right? Because, I mean, you have Luka Doncic, you just traded for Kyrie Irving to make this run, And I believe Kyrie Irving is going to be a free agent. So what does that say to him that an organization would just pack it in when they still had a puncher's chance of, you know, getting in? And you still also have to nurture that relationship with Luka Doncic, because I know that there were rumblings about, well, now is he unhappy about this? He's going to force a trade. Eventually, if the Mavericks don't get better down the line. So I don't know. I just think that their particular approach or their strategy is kind of weird. I mean, I guess they're, like you said, they're trying to get that number one pick in the lottery to get Victor Wembanyama, but what is the likelihood? Like, is it like a 1% chance? And I guess they're hoping for a miracle and beat the odds like the Orlando Magic did way back in, what was that, like 93, when they were able to get back-to-back number one picks, Shaquille O'Neal, then Chris Webber, and then kind of turning that into Penny Hardaway and all those draft picks up at the Warriors. But I don't know, man, that's a huge gamble. I mean, I think I personally, in that situation, would have tried for the playoffs instead of gone for the 1% chance of getting Victor Wembanyama. But
yes, the Mavericks have a 3% chance, and if the ping pong balls all fall where they should, the Mavericks will end up picking 10th. You know, so again, I've never been a proponent of tanking, you know, and in the NBA, I guess you could say it's at least easier or more acceptable with the load management situation and your sitting stars kind of more routinely. This is obviously a blatant situation where it's a must-win game and you're sitting your best players. And if you lose, well, you don't make the playoffs. So it's very different than in the NFL, which, like we saw this past year, the Houston Texans were in line for the number one pick. All they had to do was lose their last game of the season, which seemed kind of inevitable. And then they go ahead and win in, you know, they win on a Hail Mary and a 2-point conversion to win the game, you know, and inevitably it got Lovie Smith, the head coach, fired. The Texans dropped from the number one pick to the number two pick. Chicago Bears are the number one pick. They offload that number one pick for, you know, a boatload of picks and pick up a wide receiver. So obviously tanking in any sport, but is when, I guess, does tanking work? And by that, I mean, with all these guys that we see taken at the top of drafts, isn't it just so, it's still such a crapshoot that even with the number one pick, even with suck for Luck, we're going to get Andrew Luck, and he retires early. Like, there's just such a flip of the coin chance that even the most best prospect is not going to be worth, you know, the losing.
I mean, I'm a proponent of tanking when it makes sense to do so. Like, when you're a bad team and you're in need of serious talent, tanking's the way to go, as long as, you know, the people who are drafting and the people who are building your roster know what they're doing. We've seen it work in every sport, right? The Cubs, they won their first World Series in over 100 years after doing that. The Astros have won 2 World Series after going this route. We've seen it in the NHL, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, did it and won Stanley Cups after being super awful, but then being able to draft franchise players. In the NBA, we saw the San Antonio Spurs, not so much that they were tanking, but just David Robinson got hurt. So they actually didn't have to tank, but because then they lucked into Tim Duncan, they were able to extend their kind of, dynasty for years, right? And then you were saying in the NFL, you know, if there's no generation, and I don't want to throw Alex Smith under the bus, right? But if there's not a for sure generational player or quarterback to come out, then yeah, I guess it's harder. But hey, what if the Niners have gone, what if they took Aaron Rodgers, right? Then, you know, not to say they were tanking, but I'm just saying, like, if you can get that player at number one and it's a franchise altering player, then it's totally worth it. And I know you were talking about Andrew Luck. The Colts ruined Andrew Luck because they didn't do anything to support him. But if they didn't and he was still healthy, he'd still be thriving for them in the NFL, right? And I'm sure the Jags are thrilled to have Trevor Lawrence, you know? And I think the thing, too, is there is that, in my opinion, that big difference of not having that control, whether it's, okay, I got the number one pick and I can trade down if I want, or have that number one pick and I can use it to get that player that I really want. Because imagine, okay, you have the number one pick. You can go get Peyton Manning. You don't have that number one pick. Now you got to go, okay, I really want Peyton Manning, but I guess I'll take Ryan Leaf. And we all saw how that turned out. So, and on the same, by the same token, again, you're just really at the mercy. If you're the number two team, even though you could have been the number one, like you're looking at the Texans right now. Had they had the number one pick, had they just lost that meaningless, completely meaningless game, in my opinion, like if you're a fan of the Texans, do you really care that they won that game? I know you would, right? If you were the fan of the Texans, it would mean that much to you to win that second game of the season or whatever. But I think for most fans, I mean, and judging by how most fans would react when that happened, when they won, most fans would rather them lose to, I mean, after the whole season having been a debacle, what are you playing for at that point? I'm sure obviously the players are playing for pride, but as a fan, you want that number one pick. And let's say they really want Bryce Young, right? And let's say Bryce Young turns into the next Russell Wilson or the next Drew Brees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say CJ Stroud isn't, like he's just average.
Mm-hmm.
But because you won that one meaningless game, you might be stuck with CJ Stroud, assuming that's who they pick, right? We don't know right now. Right. But we saw what happened with the Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf scenario. And on the flip side, we got really lucky because had the Arizona Cardinals not hired Cliff Kingsbury, there is a very high likelihood that they would have taken Nick Bosa
mm-hmm.
instead of taking Kyler Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And allowing the Niners. So much luck went into the Niners getting Nick Bosa. The Cardinals had to have hired Cliff Kingsbury, and Cliff Kingsbury was just in love with Kyler Murray since he was in high school. So, yeah. So that's why, for me, if it makes sense to tank, you should definitely tank.
But what? How do you know if it makes sense? Because I remember you were a very big proponent of tanking for Reggie Bush, you know, in the year the Niners were that bad. Reggie Bush wasn't – certainly not great. I mean, he was – borderline.
Well, how about
good.
This? I liked Reggie Bush, like everybody liked Reggie Bush, but had they had the number one pick, would they have taken Reggie Bush? Or would they have taken Mario Williams, who again wasn't franchised? But
right.
And that's my argument of it really only works, obviously, when you have a franchise player. Like I would say the Sixers, they're a good example of the NBA where their years of tanking has not netted them. And, you know, anything, right? Like, yes, they got Joel Embiid, but who else did they get? Markelle Fultz. I think they got Jahlil Okafor. Anyway, point is that it doesn't always work, obviously.
Right.
But me being a control freak that I am, I would like to have full control of the draft board. If my team is that bad where it's like, all right, well, if we tried, we could be the second or third worst team. Why? What's the point of that? You know, just be who you are, be as bad as you're supposed to be, if not worse, just so you can have control of the draft and thereby control of your organization's future. Right. And I'll say this. It's funny that the Warriors and the Kings are in the facing off in the NBA playoffs for the first time because Harrison Barnes is on the Kings. And he used to be on the Warriors. And I remember there was this scenario where they're like, well, if the Warriors, I think if they like won too many games and that pick would have ended up going to, I think the Jazz or somebody else. I can't remember who it would have gone to. So they, I think that year before they picked Harrison Barnes, they were like, you know, semi-tanking, right? So that they can hold, like, keep that number seven pick. And lo and behold, it worked. They got it. They took Harrison Barnes. And while Harrison Barnes isn't a superstar player, he definitely played an important role during those years when they were, you know, on the up and up and, you know, on the come, and they won their first championship with him. So again, obviously, it only people will only look favorably upon it when it works. But I think it's a chance. It's to me, again, if you're super bad and if you have faith in your scouting department and they can utilize this, you know, terrible blip, you know, in your franchise's history to dig them out of irrelevance and turn them into a championship, then it's totally worth it. Right. But as we've seen, like, the Lions for years didn't have to tank. They just sucked, right? The Browns for years didn't have to actually tank. They just sucked. And they didn't have the front office to do anything with all those early picks. So obviously it only, like I said, it only makes sense when you have the people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, we got to
assume. And that there's a generational player that comes out.
All these people know what they're doing, all right?
Really? I'll tell you what. Warriors, yes. Dave Wardzik did not know what he was doing.
Right. But here's the, but that's the thing, is like, if you can't because, just like you said, because you can't guarantee that that player is not going to be Jamarcus Russell, and that you're not going to, you know, you're going to basically flame out and screw yourself over this, or you're going to draft someone like Reggie Bush and he's just going to be an average player. If it doesn't lead to a championship, was tanking worth it?
Yeah, because, I mean, like, let's say Peyton Manning never won a championship. Was it worth getting Peyton Manning? I would say so. Would you rather have Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf?
Yeah, Peyton Manning. But would you rather – but that's my thing. Would you rather have C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young right now?
And you have I'm not going through the process, so I don't know.
But that's the thing. It's like, of course, at the end of the day, everyone's going to go, everyone wants Peyton Manning, not Ryan Leaf.
No. But that's not the point. The point is you had the choice.
No,
you had the control.
That's fine. But even with the control, you're not guaranteed that you're going to get the right guy.
No, but I would rather have the control rather than be, stuck with Ryan Leaf.
I understand you want the control, but if I told you, Jerry, you're going to have the control, but you're not going to win a championship.
I don't really know why you're playing this
I mean,
game.
I'm not, because of course you get to cherry pick all the time. Like, yeah, look at the Astros tanked and they won a, you know, World Series.
It's not cherry picking. It's proof that it works, right? Like, if you have a generational play, LeBron James, I mean, is he not worth tanking for? Even back then, when you didn't know, right? You didn't know he was going to be the LeBron James of today. But when he was coming out, what was he billed as?
Was Darko?
Right? So you would want to roll that dice.
Was Darko Milicic worth tanking for?
No, but nobody tanked for Darko Milicic.
But that's the thing. He was discussed as a possible top pick, and
sure,
became an absolute flame out bust. So if you ask anyone's like, was it worth losing any of those games to pick this guy? Absolutely not. You know, was it worth it to the Bucks?
Well, how about this? Maybe the best answer to your question. Maybe the best answer to your question is, are you willing to take that risk? And I would be willing to take that risk.
Okay.
Of tanking, having the best pick. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. But I would rather go in that direction than remain in mediocrity because I keep getting stuck with the number four pick, the number five pick.
Well, not very good then. If you get the number four pick consistently and can't build a good team, maybe that's on you.
Maybe. Or, I mean, again, I think that if you have good talent and you're able to get the best pick, you're better off getting the best pick, the first pick. That's just how I feel.
How often in the past 5 years do you think the best player was picked number one in the NFL? I don't know, because I'm just looking.
I don't know.
So
we know not the year that Arizona took Kyler number one.
So just go back five years.
But right? You can't say the best, right? The best doesn't necessarily come number one in football. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't want to say like in hockey. I think that happens more often in hockey, right? Connor McDavid was number one. Sidney Crosby was number one. Was Ovechkin number one? I imagine
nope.
Ovechkin was.
Nope, because he came out the same with Crosby.
Oh, was he number two?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. But yeah, I mean, but see, that year it was fine because you had two surefire Hall of Famers come out. And that's what I mean. Like, you don't know, but I would play the odds that I would take, I want that number one choice. That's just how I am. For you, you don't care. You just, hey, if like Kevin Garnett slid to me, yay. If I'm stuck with Carlos Boozer, then I'm stuck with Carlos Boozer. Whatever. Like, you just don't care.
Who was your number one on your draft board in 2018? The Baker Mayfield, Saquon Barkley, Sam Darnold, Denzel Ward, Bradley Chubb, Quentin Nelson draft.
Does it even really matter? I don't think any of those players are really like you would say, yes, oh, like the
because
greatest.
Again, because you just said, oh, well, you had your choice between Crosby and Ovechkin, two surefire Hall of Famers. I don't think anyone knows they're surefire Hall of Famers the day they get drafted.
I feel like in hockey, they have a better. I mean, in some sports, I feel like they do have that feel. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like in hockey, there's certain players who come out and what they say about them is often true. It often plays out, right? Like, when's the last time there was a basketball prodigy that came out? Was it LeBron? Has there been another one since LeBron? I don't think so, right?
I don't know.
And when Andrew Luck came out, it was Andrew Luck, surefire, and he was. Trevor Lawrence, we've yet to see, but he's on the right trajectory.
I mean, let's see. John Wall, number one.
Yeah, but no. See, he wasn't one of those guys.
Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis has been really good. I mean, would you Hall tank for Anthony Davis?
Surefire Hall of Famer.
No, but I would tank for Anthony Davis. Like, in that year, if I could get Anthony Davis, I would. And seeing, I mean, granted, he's had injury issues, but at the time,
over Damian Lillard, over Bradley Beal, Andre Drummond.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but you wouldn't win. I mean,
why not?
Because I'm just saying, Anthony Davis hasn't won. He hasn't.
Yeah, that's not on him, right? I mean, he was stuck in New Orleans for how many years? First of all, and second of all, I mean, you can't account for injuries because I don't remember. I don't think he had like an injury rap sheet back then, you know. But yeah, I mean, nobody knew who Damian Lillard was, you know. I mean, point guard, Weber State.
Do you think Damian Lillard's better than Anthony Davis?
I'd say they're on an even, pretty safe, pretty equal level.
How about Anthony?
And if you want to talk championships, I mean, yes, it was the bubble year, but Anthony Davis has a championship if you want to go there.
Anthony Bennett?
No, but I think that year, I want to say everybody thought Anthony Bennett was not worthy. Like, that was a weird year. I don't even remember who else got taken, but I remember when he
Otto
got taken.
Porter Jr., Cody Zeller,
yeah.
Alex.
Yeah, that was a bad year. As you can tell, that was a terrible year. Terrible year. So, yeah, so sometimes it's not worth it, right? That's why I said, like, if first, it's definitely worth it if you know or if you have a feeling that there is a marquee franchise player coming out. And did I like Baker Mayfield that year? No, I did not like Baker Mayfield. Did I like Sam Darnold? I liked him, but I didn't love him. You know who I liked, but only because the two players I liked most. Do you remember it from that year? But mainly because of the Niners. So it wasn't so much I wanted them number one or I thought they'd go number one. Do you remember?
What year are you talking about? The
2018, the one that you asked me about.
Let's see. You probably liked I don't know. I liked Quentin Nelson the best.
Yes, Quentin Nelson and Bradley Chubb. So I was upset because what happened with the Niners that year? Do you remember? Jimmy Cain ripped off all these wins and we slid down to number 9.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we could have gotten Quentin Nelson.
Could have.
Or Bradley Chubb. So, but yeah, so, you know, hey, we all know the whole process is unpredictable. But what, so what can you do to maybe control the process a little more than, you know?
So that leads me to my next question, because unlike the NFL, the NBA at least has the lottery system. So even if you come in dead last, there's no guarantee. In fact, the worst three teams have the same percentage chance of getting it. So it doesn't matter if you come in dead last, second to last, third to last. You know, if you come in 10th like the Mavericks, you got a 3% chance. So obviously tanking. So are you still a proponent of tanking even when you're not going to control where you pick? Now you can, I guess, control like kind of marginal percentages that you're going to get, but is that worth it?
If Victor Wembanyama is coming out for the draft, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So so if you're the Pelicans, you just lose, you know, at the
No, but see, that's what I meant. The Pelicans aren't that team, right? The Pelicans was a team that you're supposed to have at this point made the stride. Now, I guess it depends on your view of Zion Williamson. I know my friend Brian has zero faith in Zion ever staying healthy, you know, but if you are the Pelicans organization,
you have to
feel like, hey, he's going to at some point stay healthy. You have Brandon Ingram, you have CJ McCollum. So that's not a good example of a team that's going to go, hey, wait, Victor Wembanyama is available. Let's just, and I don't even know how you would do that. That's the thing. That's what I mean by, if you're a bad team, you're going to lose anyway.
So, right?
So don't, there's no need to win the meaningless games to, like, you know, they always say, oh, you can't lose on purpose. Well, you sort of can. I mean, depending on, like, which players, like, hey, maybe these players are hurt. You can put them on the bench, what have you.
How would you ever build a team if no one, if the players didn't have faith that you were trying to win?
So do you think that the Sixers, they haven't built a good team? Because they have, right? They've built a good team since the days of trusting their, what they call the process. I mean, it's basically tanking. They just rebranded it as the process, right? But they've built one, right?
Well, no, because they haven't won anything. And it was.
Well, sure they have. They just haven't won the championship.
Right. None of that. And as a fan, how many years of being absolutely horrible is it worth it to possibly be good?
But they have a chance to win the championship, right? Okay. So it's not like
everyone's
a middling eighth seed type of team.
No, I'm not saying that, but that's the point, is how many years of the Warriors were not tanking before they won their championship. They were just bad. And how did they get good? They got lucky by getting Steph Curry. They got lucky by getting Draymond in the second round. They got lucky that they, you know, had new ownership willing to spend. They got lucky that Steve Kerr wanted to come coach the Warriors and not go to the – so a lot of it is luck, right? And the Warriors were not tanking. But that doesn't mean that you weren't trying to build something, which is kind of my – reasoning an example of, you can build, again, with smart people and getting a little lucky, a championship from anywhere. So, and tanking, it doesn't guarantee you anything outside of, yes, you get to have control. But as we know, I mean, I think Zion Williamson's a perfect example. I mean, everyone wanted Zion. Everyone was tanking for Zion. Everyone wanted this guy, right?
I don't remember people tanking for him, but
oh yes, maybe. Oh, everyone. He was, remember, he was at Duke. He was going number one, like after game two, where he, like, everyone wanted him. But that's the thing, is like, was it worth it? Like, if the Pelicans did tank or whatever, you know, like lost some down the road games, and they're like, you know what, if we lose this kid, like, let's rest some people. Like, was it worth it? And at some point, you can't just say it's worth it in 7 years if we win a championship, because so much happens. Like, you're talking about a franchise-altering player. And that guy was supposed to be a franchise-altering player, and because he's overweight, he's injured, he doesn't have the work ethic, money got – whatever the reason is, the Pelicans are stuck in this middle of the road. So was it worth it? I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not saying it doesn't work, because of course it works if, again, you get lucky, there's a franchise guy, and you nail the pick. That's what I'm saying. It's like, at some point, you have to be able to build your team for a championship. So let me throw – so we talked about the NBA draft lottery and how that's their way to try and equal things out to, hey, we're not going to tank, you know, because everyone's going to have at least a partial chance to get there. So I saw this plan. It was floated out initially for NHL, but it holds water as well, that once your team is eliminated from the playoffs, whoever has the most wins gets the number one pick.
I'm sorry, which league is proposing this?
No team. This was a columnist trying to talk about how to get rid of tanking. How do you get rid of tanking? You know, basically because it screws the fans, like the people in Dallas who went to see what was going to be a must-win game on Slovakia Appreciation Night, where he was from, and he plays 13 minutes and they lose and they get out. So how do you implement a plan that eliminates tanking, like truly losing on purpose, whilst, you know, how do you do that? How could you do that, eliminate tanking? And this person's suggestion was, by once you're eliminated from playoff contention, whoever has the most wins gets the number one pick. So thus, if you're really that bad, you're eliminated early, so you have the most chances to garner
wins. Yeah, I don't like that, because you could just be a really bad team without trying to tank.
Sure, absolutely.
So I don't like that. I don't know. I understand you're anti-tanking, so you guys, those who are anti-tanking, are looking for any way to get rid of it. I'm not, so I wouldn't care, right? So
let me give you another one. The St. Louis Battlehawks in the XFL went to the first overtime game in the XFL this season. Their two-point conversion, their overtime is a shootout format of two-point conversions. So they each get three shots to run a two-point conversion play from the five-yard line, much like hockey. If you get two, another team gets one, you win the game. 3-2. Is that better than the current NFL system of one team gets the ball, and if they get the touchdown, the other team doesn't get the ball, but if you get a field goal, the other team gets a chance to match? Is the shootout XFL format of overtime any better than the current?
Okay, so hold on. You just completely changed subjects. We're not talking tanking anymore.
No, I can't talk to you. I can't talk to you about tanking. It's pain. I don't know.
Because you're anti, right? I mean, you're anti, so it offends you.
It absolutely. It offends me to my very core. So
I mean, let's put it this way. You know, the year that the Bengals had the number one overall pick, I think people like were willing to give the Bengals like all their draft picks to get Joe Burrow. But they didn't. They didn't take any of those packages, because they're like, yes, we're in the driver's seat. We can finally get that franchise quarterback. And yes, of course, could he have been a bust? Yes. Could he have been not the same after, you know, tearing his knee? Yes. But he wasn't. And so, yes, was it worth? I don't know if they tanked that year, but getting Joe Burrow, however they got him, worth it. The year that Myles Garrett went number one, right? Who had the number two pick? The Niners. And you know who they got stuck with? They got stuck with Solomon Thomas. Would you rather have Myles Garrett? I know we talked about it then. We're like, man, I really hope that the Browns decide. I can't remember who they're thinking. Oh, I hope the Browns take Mitch Trubisky. So Myles Garrett can fall to. I mean, I don't. Again, if I'm the team, I don't want to have to hope and wish or having to trade up. Right? Remember when the Bears had to trade up to get Trubisky, like from 3 to 2, because the Niners were able to trick them into thinking that their Niners going to take Trubisky.
Yep.
No, I don't want to deal with that. Like, if I want a certain player, I'd rather have that control. That's what I would prefer. I don't know why that's so offensive to you, but
it's
you know,
beyond offensive. But that's why I've changed the subject. Otherwise, the podcast would be just cut short through my anger. So
you would want to know if you would rather the overtime be like the NFL, where they have to like play it out, or they just explain the XFL thing again. So I wasn't sure where you were going with that because I thought we were still talking tanking. And I was like, wow, what does that have to do with tanking? So explain the XFL thing to me again.
It's shootout format. You best 2 out of 3 2-point conversion. So you get a shot. You run a 2-point conversion play, and then you team B, then team A, team B, team A, team B. Much like hockey, you get 3 shots at a shootout, and then.
Well, so is it kind of like college football? Isn't college football that way, where they go into overtime and then they get the ball at like the, I don't know, the 20?
No, because it's you get one play.
Oh, you get one play.
You get one play.
I call me lazy, call me a traditionalist. I don't know. I just like the way that the NFL does it. I don't know. I've never seen it. Maybe if I saw how the XFL does it and it looked good to me, but just by hearing how it goes, I'm not a big fan. Are you a fan? Have you watched it?
I saw the highlights. I'm not a fan. I think it's an interesting concept. It gives a team, you know, it basically it's one of those teams that gives the better team a better shot of winning. You know, it eliminates the fluke play. It eliminates the chance that, you know, a team gets one lucky bomb on the free safety who fell down. Like you have to run 3 plays, right? And can you score on these 3 plays? And can your defense stop the team? And I just think it levels the playing field to the better team will win more often than not in a situation where you have to, you know, run multiple plays opposed to that. I'm not against what the NFL does. I just wish they would go play the 10-minute overtime, either play the 10-minute overtime and like whatever happens, or none of this. If you get a field goal, it's like both teams get the ball no matter what. Like you either score a touchdown, a field goal, or punted, turn the ball over, whatever, and the other team gets the ball. You know, like give each team at least one shot at the game. The idea that, oh, well, they will get the ball if you only hold them to a field goal, but you don't get the ball if you give up a touchdown. Still takes away for me what everyone wanted in that Kansas City Buffalo game was we wanted to see Josh Allen with one shot to have the ball, right? So it's like, that's all. So well, again,
you gotta stop them from getting a touchdown then.
Yeah, no,
which is actually not a lot to ask normally under normal circumstances, right? Like keep the team to a field goal. But I think you convinced me about the XFL. The more I hear about it, the more exciting it sounds. So let's go with the XFL version. I'm on board. You convinced
me. Like what the
not so much with the tanking or not tanking, but you've convinced me about the overtime.
Yes. let's chat real quick about the top 10 in the NFL draft, because again, we're coming up. We talked about the top 5 last week. Refresh my memory. In fact, we actually both agreed that we thought CJ Stroud was going to go to the Panthers 1 week later. Do you still feel that way? Or is all the smoke of Bryce Young to the Panthers, you know, have you swaying in a different direction now?
Yeah. I don't know. Like you said, last week we talked about CJ Stroud going to Carolina, Bryce Young going to Houston. Will Smith we had going to Arizona,
yep.
Will Levis going to Indy, and then Anthony Richardson going to Seattle. But like you said, the latest rumors actually have not only Bryce Young possibly going to Carolina, but also Arizona trading with, I think, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know if you want to redo that top five mock real quick with the assumption that the Cardinals trade down?
Yes. One more week. And let me, can I tell you a little side note? One of the things that drives me crazy is when
tanking.
No, that drives me more than crazy. That drives me, you know, clinically insane. Is when pundits, talking heads, whatever, they make their prediction or they talk about, like, I believe, you know, I believe such and such is going to happen, right? And then they change it later on and they say, well, new information has come up. Okay, I get that, but what's the new information outside of everyone else is picking the opposite of what you picked previously? Like, that's, there's no new information. Like, if you get new information that, oh, he had grew 3 inches or he put on pounds or like, so that's new information. But when somebody like, when someone, there's a local radio host who talks all the time, like, you're like, oh, I thought they were going to lose, but after new information. Yeah, the new information is you watch the game, they won, and now you change. Just because the result has happened, that's not new information. That's like, oh, well, if I can go back in time. No, new information is actually information you've gathered, you've read, you've read, whatever. So that's why I'm saying this is new information. This, when we made the pick of CJ Stroud, I still thought it was, I thought that was the best possible pick. The results aren't in yet. So does all the talk and what people are saying that it is going to be Bryce Young, that's fine. Like, that's new information. So if we want to give Bryce, I'm all for giving Bryce Young to the Panthers.
So you believe the latest rumblings that Carolina is now enamored with Bryce Young?
To answer that in two ways. Yes, I do. And I think it's the wrong choice.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, honestly, for me, I feel like if the Titans trade up, it'll obviously be for a quarterback. However, I'm just not sure what the order will be, whether it's Bryce Young going one, CJ Stroud going one. So I feel like we just need to keep an eye on, we'll have to keep an eye on the new information, Todd. But either way, I think four quarterbacks will most likely be selected in the first four picks. And I believe it'll be the first time that happens in draft history. And yeah, and if that occurs, then I guess the Seahawks will then take Will Anderson at number five.
That would not be good. That would not be good. So we're going to say Bryce Young to the Panthers. So you're going to say CJ Stroud to the Texans?
Sure. Or
all right. Yeah. So you think there's a legit possibility that the Titans will move all the way from 11 to 3?
That's the latest rumor.
You believe it? A lot of rumors.
Honestly, I don't know if it's going to be the Titans. I do believe that somebody's going to move up to three for a quarterback.
Okay. And
who that is, I don't know yet because, I haven't thought that through. I just heard that latest rumor about the Titans, but I mean, it could very well be Washington. It could be very well be the Raiders.
Yep.
Well,
in your mind, who's that number three quarterback off the board? Do you think it's Will Levis or do you think Anthony Richardson has done enough in the, you know, interview process, the workout?
I think it's the Titans. They're going to go Anthony Richardson. If it's the Raiders, I think the Raiders go Will Levis.
All right. So do you think the Colts at number four just take the last remaining one?
I do think so.
So Levis and Richardson are off the board. It leaves Will Anderson to the Seahawks. We're going to go Will Anderson Jr., the edge rusher from Alabama, to the Seahawks, leaving it to the Detroit Lions, who made a little bit of news today as they traded former first-round pick Jeff Okuda to the Falcons.
Yes.
For like a fifth round draft pick. So does that make corner the obvious glaring point for the Detroit Lions? And does that mean a guy like Christian Gonzalez, Devon Witherspoon becomes the choice?
Yes. Well, no. I do think they will be looking at corner, like you said, because they just traded away Jeff Okuda, and the two players that they would be looking at that position would be Devin Witherspoon of Illinois and Christian Gonzalez of Oregon. However, you know how Dan Campbell is all about that kneecap biting, and I don't think that he can pass up on defensive tackle Jalen Carter out of Georgia, who's, you know, actually had a terrible pre-draft season.
Yep.
You know, being charged with reckless driving for his role in a car wreck, and then was out of shape at his pro day that he couldn't finish the workout. Mm-hmm. But I think his talent is just, it's just undeniable, right? Because on film, he shows that he could just be this tremendous game wrecker. So I think Dan Campbell and the Lions rolled the dice on Jalen Carter.
Brings up the Las Vegas Raiders, assuming they are not one of the team, or they are not the team to trade up with the Cardinals. Who do they sit there and watch?
I mean, they could go offensive tackle. They could go edge rusher, defensive end, or they can go cornerback. So I think this is where Devin Witherspoon of Illinois comes off the board, because the Raiders were ranked dead last in takeaways last season. And I think they're just desperate for a corner who's, you know, physical and can play the ball. And that's who Witherspoon is.
And is Witherspoon the top corner on your board?
I haven't really thought about it that way yet. I do like him a lot. I don't know. I'd have to grind some more tape, as they say, Todd, between Witherspoon and Gonzalez.
Okay. Well, you'll have one more week before our full pre-draft show to grind that tape. So for the time being, Devin Witherspoon, number 7 to the Raiders. That brings up the Falcons. So they're sitting at number 8. They seem to be content with Desmond Ridder as their quarterback of the future. They just, obviously, we just mentioned, traded for Jeff Okuda. Does this mean they go? I'm sure they would be, you know, smitten for Jalen Carter to be able to keep him in Georgia and, you know, go down the road to, you know, the Falcons from the University of Georgia. But where do the Falcons go now with both of them off the board? We're talking Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher from Texas Tech. You're talking Paris Johnson, the big offensive tackle from Ohio State. Christian Gonzalez, who you just mentioned, the other corner. Probably still too early for Bijan Robinson, the do-everything running back from Texas, although I think he's going to be kind of an anomaly. I think he's going to get drafted earlier than most people think in this draft. Most likely he's going to end up on a team kind of in the middle of the first round, like the Patriots, like the Packers. Like, he's going to go to a somewhat established team, and everyone's going to look at him and go, how did they get him? How did they get him? So he's kind of my guy. And then you have a bunch of the receivers on the board still, which I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on, because different people have different rankings for these wide receivers. No one seems to be a sure lock going number one wide receiver, but where do you eye the Falcons going number 8?
So before the trade, I did think that they would take Christian Gonzalez right here to, you know, pair with AJ Terrell, just to form that super tandem at corner. I suppose they could still take him, just because, I mean, 6'1", silky smooth, top end athleticism. But after getting Okuda, I'm now thinking maybe they go that outside linebacker, because they're moving to a 3-4 defense. Mm-hmm. So I think they take the local kid out of Georgia, Nolan Smith.
Really? So you're going to have him go? That's interesting. I like it, because I think Nolan Smith is exceptionally talented. I like it. You think you like him better than some of the other edges, the Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech, the Miles Murphy from Clemson, even the Luke Van Ness from Iowa guys?
Well, so let's just move on to 9, because I do like Tyree Wilson. At 9, I have Matt Eberflus and the Bears going DN and taking Tyree Wilson out of Texas Tech. But, I mean, he's 6'6", 270 pounds. I guess I don't think of him as the 3-4 edge outside linebacker as much as I would think Nolan Smith would be.
Yep.
At, you know, 6'6", 270, he'd be more almost like your, you know,
your
3-4, but that defensive tackle, defensive end, right, kind of player. Yeah, so, but dude has like nearly 36-inch arms, length arms. So, I mean, that guy's, you know, freakish in the best way possible, I guess. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Falcons took him just for those measurables. But yeah, I just feel like Nolan Smith with his speed, that's the way he'll go. They'll go with the Falcons.
And while certainly not sexy pick and doesn't have the name recognition of, say, a Nick Bosa, the Bears got to be feeling good about that pick, considering the trade out of the number one pick to get such an impact player at a position of need for a defensive minded head coach. You still haven't addressed the big problem of protecting Justin Fields, but I got to think that that's going to be down the line with one of the other picks. So rounding out the top 10 is the Philadelphia Eagles via the Saints, I believe, last year's trade. The Eagles and their basically Super Bowl appearance and not having the number 10 pick got to feel good for Howie Roseman and the Eagles fans. Where do you think they go? Where do you think they go?
I'm going to say Roseman and the Eagles take running back Bijan Robinson out of Texas. How do they get that guy to go with Jalen Hurts, to go with Devontae Smith, to go with AJ Brown? That's where the how do they get that guy, Bijan Robinson.
It's interesting that that is the running back, a running back would go before the wide receivers, just considering how the NFL works, but it speaks to Robinson's, I don't know, uncanny ability. Like he would have been a top, I got to believe he would have been a top 3 or 4 pick if this was 15 years ago and running backs were talked about as the bell cow, the Adrian Petersons of the world that are difference makers. And he's a difference maker speed-wise, power-wise. He can catch the ball, all kinds of stuff. So if Niner fans didn't like the Eagles before the draft, they certainly aren't going to like them very much more when they add another weapon to their arsenal. So, okay. So you got the top 10. We got first four going quarterbacks with a proposed trade at number 3 with the Cardinals, the Colts essentially taking the last remaining quarterback. Will Anderson, by all accounts, or many accounts, one of the best edge players to come out in a long time, falling all the way to 5. And again, Jerry, you're not making Niner fans happy at all, considering Will Anderson to the Seahawks. You're talking a corner to the Raiders and the Eagles taking Bijan Robinson. So you're not making any friends in Niner Nation with all of your predicted picks. So we will continue to go through the first round next week. We're going to talk more about the players on our boards that we like. The guys, for example, Witherspoon or Gonzalez, which one do we like? It's a perfect opportunity to remind everybody and kind of rehash the fact that we go through, you know, we had gone through an exercise for a long time. Because, you know, we thought, hey, we can make picks in the moment with people on the board that rival many of these GMs without having the 2020 hindsight of, well, I always liked that guy, or I knew that guy was going to be good. Can you make the pick in real time during the draft? So we'll go through some of that, and we'll stack our boards and talk about some of the guys that we like. Specifically, I want to get into the receivers with you. I know you enjoy breaking down the receivers, and there's a lot of receivers with multi-talented, some red flags that I'd like to discuss. So, and maybe we'll also get into the quarterbacks, just because we saw 4 quarterbacks go not too long ago, and right now it's looking like one's good, one's unproven, one hasn't got a chance, and one's a bust. So, of those 4, which one of these guys is actually going to nail it? So anyways, before we get out of here, Jerry, final thought.
Just a couple of quick thoughts. First, I hope all is well with Charvarius Ward and his daughter, who I heard had open heart surgery today. So best wishes to all of them as she continues her recovery. And then secondly, major props to Chris Bubich of the Kansas City Royals, who pitched 6 shutout innings and tallied 9 punchouts against the San Francisco Giants at Oracle Park over the weekend, because I think it's just so cool to see a local kid who played for Moreland Little League, then went on to star at Archbishop Mitty High School, and then on to being a big fish at Stanford, and now doing his thing in the bigs. So congrats to Chris Bubich, and I do hope he has a great rest of the season.
Nice. My final thought is actually an echo. I believe it was from last week or 2 weeks ago, and that is, we continue to get into the Major League Baseball season, and the Major League Baseball new rules that I was worried about have been continue to be phenomenal. The pace of play in the games is outstanding. The athleticism needed. I mean, the New York Yankees have stolen more bases, I think, in the first 2 weeks of the season than they did in the past 2 years combined. I mean, they are a running machine. They're begging for Ricky Henderson to come out of retirement just so they can trade for him again. The anti-shift is creating more singles, thus higher batting averages. So I hope everyone that was a baseball fan who may have been reluctant to adopt them or reluctant to give them a chance is enjoying kind of a really nice, fun beginning of the Major League Baseball season. I hope everyone who is a basketball fan is getting ready for the NBA playoffs, because they'll start now and they'll end in about 6 months, because that's the way the NBA does it. They can condense they elongate their regular season only to elongate their playoffs, which is, again, you want to talk about going in the opposite direction of baseball. Baseball's trying to speed things up and get things done quicker. The NBA is going the other way, and they want to draw it out like a long drama movie. So we'll see. For the first time in a long time, I think the Warriors are going to be exciting from start to finish, especially considering their NorCal rivalry against the Sacramento Kings, which is happening for the first time ever, which, while people will say, oh, that isn't that cool, not surprising, because the Kings were so bad for so long, and for the flash in the pan that the Kings were good, well, the Warriors were not good at all. So the fact that they have to just, I don't know. If you're an NBA player, do you take a bus from San Francisco to Sacramento? Do you just drive yourself? I don't know how.
Just drive.
Do you drive yourself, though? Do you have a driver? Do you take a helicopter? Whatever it is, however they're getting up and back on Interstate 80 or 680, enjoy. I'm going to enjoy the playoffs, because I think there's a lot to be said for the Warriors and this team and everything they've gone through this season. So with that said, we are just over 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. It's a tentpole event for the NFL. It'll create a lot of conversation. Hopefully next week we'll have more information to break down and discuss. We'll have more information, hopefully, about the Niners. Not that there's going to be a whole lot, considering I don't think they're going to be moving up very far from 99, 101, 102, but we'll have to see about that. So in any event, enjoy another peaceful NFL week. Enjoy the rest of the sporting landscape. For those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area, enjoy what has been a phenomenal last 3 days of weather as we cracked into the 70s. Yeah. So for Jerry, I'm Todd. Thanks for listening to the Niner Guys. We will see you next week. Good night.